Welcome to our podcast series, Talking with Traders, hosted by expert trader Garth McKenzie in London, from where he's interviewing various guests on the topic of trading.
Welcome to Season 3 of the Talking with Traders podcast series with me, Garth McKenzie. Backed by popular demand following the first two seasons, I'll bring you a string of interviews over the next 10 weeks with a number of seasoned traders in my network to give you a first-hand insight into how they trade the world's financial markets so successfully. The first two seasons of this podcast have had over 20,000 downloads of the interviews, so I've used this traction to seek greater global reach for the third season. A special word of thanks must go to our sponsors, IG Markets, for continuing to fund this podcast and to allow it to flourish. In Season 3 of Talking with Traders, I've gone beyond the borders of South Africa to speak to traders from across the globe. I'll ask pertinent questions of each of my guests to really try and get them to open up about what makes them consistently successful when it comes to taking on the world's financial markets. Joining me on today's Talking with Traders podcast is Stephen Goldstein. He's based in London and he runs Alpha R Cubed. He's a trading coach and an executive coach, a former trader, still does trade a bit, but predominantly now coaches traders and has a lot to say about that. So Stephen, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Pleasure to be here, Garth.
Thanks very much. Stephen, let's go back to the beginning of your career. What got you involved in the markets right in the beginning? And can you tell us a little bit about the path that your career has followed to get from where you started to where you are today as a trading coach?
Yeah. So we go all the way back to the mid-1980s. And I was, I suppose you could say, early 20s, working in London, working in banks, actually not investment banks, but literally a bank in a high street bank. Found it very boring and uninspiring. And the city was only just starting to open up, the city of London. Trading was just beginning as we know it now. The markets we had what was called Big Bang in the UK, which was part of a process of deregulating and opening the markets. And we had the futures exchanges started to open up in the UK. Banks started getting involved in foreign exchange trading activities. Some of the early interest rate derivative products, it just started all around that mid-80s time. And I knew a few people, I bumped into a few people that were working in jobs in banks in the city. And it just sounded really exciting. I didn't know anything about it, what it was, what it entailed. But, you know, they were talking about, you know, leaving their boring job and earning 10 times as much money, you know, within a couple of years. And that sounded very exciting. So I applied for a job with really nothing going for me in terms of qualifications or anything. I hadn't been to university, had some pretty low-key school results. I was quite good numerically, so I was always good at being at a with numbers and thinking off the top of my head. And I landed a job at a Japanese bank in their trading room as a trading room assistant in 1985, I think it was. And then within about 2 years, they've thrown me into a trading desk role, but not really trading. And then I think it was October 1987, they gave me my first book to run, which was quite an interesting time.
Yeah,
sure. Baptism by fire. It wasn't in stocks. It was in rates and FX, but it was, all markets were affected by what happened that week. And that was literally my first position that I ran was the week before. That was a Japanese yen rates position. So it was very interesting. Obviously, like everyone else, I was doing a little bit of small penny investing at that time. That had become very much in vogue for young people, traders and non-traders alike. So, and then of course October 87 happened. That was like, it was like being hit by a tsunami. Mm. And, so that was my early experiences. And then I carried on in that job. I moved to a small Norwegian bank, in the late '80s. And then I moved to the Swiss bank, Credit Suisse, in the early '90s. My early trading, no one really showed you how to do it. you kind of learn from people around you who also didn't really know how to do it. You know, we were all learning from each other. It was sink or swim. It was very little regulation. The people running it didn't know what the other people were doing, but there was just a lot of money being made. You can always think of it as, you know, a little bit of the Wild West in those days. And, you know, probably not surprising that in a very short space of time, you know, we had quite a few market blow-ups, things like Lehman's and, Barings, things like that. But I was learning what you probably now call relative value trading. That was kind of the niche I ran into, trading different products in the bond and rate and FX world that would go into one sort of bucket and that you could offset against each other. We would call it arbitrage in those days, and you would try and capture a very slim spread in high volume. And that was pretty much my early year experiences doing that. It wasn't trading of the type that probably most of your audience are familiar with, but there was a little bit of that going on around it. But I lost interest in that. I found it very boring and dull. It didn't really excite me. There didn't seem to be an awful lot of skill to it. I was also market making some products in the rates markets around that time, which I didn't really enjoy either, if I'm honest. It was quoting things for clients and then being hit and then having to try and get out. If you had a book that was really active, you could make a lot of money doing it. But if you had a book that was quite peripheral and you had some very large, say, early hedge fund clients hitting you in those days, they could wipe out your P&L very quickly. So I kind of gravitated more towards proprietary trading. That's what I wanted to do. That's what I liked. That's what I enjoyed. It was the puzzle part of it that I liked. So by the mid-90s, I was running a proprietary trading book. I was doing well. They throw me onto a new proprietary trading desk at Credit Suisse. I suppose in a sense, I'd had a couple of really good years and become a little bit of a rising star, which is when I hit the buffers. You know, your head gets a little bit too big. You believe your own publicity. It became a big setback in my career, sort of mid-90s. And then we had some internal politics going on. I left the bank and I moved to the German bank, Commerzbank, where I was, they tried to hire me once they realized I was available. So I worked there for about 7 years, but it wasn't a particularly good place for me to work. Again, lots of politics going on. The job didn't turn out to be the job I wanted. I moved around a little bit, but became a little bit institutionalized there. So kind of my career sort of slipped back late '90s. And then around about the year 2000, I had a coach, an executive coach, and he helped me enormously sort of start to discover who I was, start to examine my process, my practice, to reflect a lot on how I did my job. He wasn't a trading coach, although he did a lot of work in trading businesses. He generally worked with the leaders and managers. And that period catalyzed something for me. And then after that, I came out and I started working far more effectively, far more productively as a trader. I left Commerzbank soon after that and went to the banking arm of American Express, where I was supposed to be running their swaps portfolio. But I effectively became a proprietary trader there and had a really good run of success, a really strong run there. Trading mostly in the rates markets, bond futures markets. And then I did that until they were taken over by Standard Chartered in 2008 as the financial crisis was coming to an end. And I worked in there, but they didn't really want prop traders within their London office. They were mostly a flow business. And that brought that to an end. And that was, that, I suppose, in a sense, I traded for myself from home for a year. I did okay, but I didn't enjoy it. And that's when actually I was looking to join a hedge fund. Bizarrely, my old coach was now doing a lot of work with hedge fund traders, and he introduced me to a few to see if I could take my work, what I was doing there, into a hedge fund. But he also suggested the idea of maybe becoming a coach myself. And that's where I started practicing. I decided I wanted to go down that road, did a little bit of trading whilst I was also developing myself as a coach and starting a bit of work as that. But I couldn't focus really on the two of them. I was either one or the other. As a trader, I was full on. And I think you have to be full on as a trader. You either give it your all or, it's hard to do both. I know there's some people that do manage to do it. I wasn't one of those. And I kind of stopped doing professional trading. I still run a small book. I still do a few trades here and there, but it's just a hobby now.
Right. Fascinating story. Now, you, as a coach now, you said to me that you coach hedge fund traders, investment bank traders. You also have retail traders that you coach as well. So quite a broad spectrum of different people that you coach within your business. But what, in your mind, makes a trader successful? What separates the successful traders from the vast majority of people that are unsuccessful at trading?
Oh, it's a big question. Luck plays a big part. For example, if we go back to me, I found myself in a bank. I found a bank job. You learn trading. You get mentored through that process, whether it's direct, whether it's deliberate or not. And that started me off in that process, and that puts you on a path. And I guess I was lucky like that. So luck plays a part in some sense. And, you get somebody else's capital to trade with whilst you learn, you get support. So in a sense, luck plays a part. But then you've got to turn that luck into something. So you have to have certain qualities, certain traits. It's such a big question. But for retail traders, for the ones I look at, now and that I work with now, you have to do the hard work. That's one thing. You have to learn the job. So many people I meet, especially retail traders, go into this with massive, unrealistic expectations. Yeah. They think anyone could do this. They think it's easy. I'm going to be honest. I don't think, despite all that luck, I don't think I became a good trader till 13 years into my career. That's why I talk about luck. I was lucky enough to stay in it and get paid and earn an income. I was erratic. I had some really good periods and some really mediocre periods. But being in the job, you could say, kept me in it and allowed me to become good. Other people I know, it's very rare that people are good off the bat. There are one or two people that for one reason or another, usually very specific reasons, will be good off the bat. But most people I know takes 5, 6, 7 years to become half decent. I use a comparison to boxing. If you decide I'm going to become a boxer, you're not going to walk in the ring day one with Floyd Mayweather.
No.
But in trading, you are. Trading day one, you're out there in the same ring as the Ray Dalios and the Paul Tudor Joneses and, the legends of the market and the guys that have been doing it, 10, 15, 20 years that you never heard of. They are on the other side of your trades. So, you just got to use those early years for learning and learn as much as you can. And they also have unrealistic, they don't understand the job. They think it's about predicting where markets go. Well, absolutely not. And that may surprise a few people listening. Obviously, you have to do that. You have to do your research, your background. You've got to try and identify market direction and market opportunities. But really, you're trying to find setups. And, it can take years to realize that's the nature of what you're trying to do. And then the skill is monetizing that. That's the hard part of the job. That is the job, though. So people mistake what trading is for prediction. I meet people who've been doing this job 10, 15 years and they suddenly get it when they talk about that. And, I've had a number of retail trading clients who usually the luck in them for them is that they've got a lot of money to start with. They've had maybe successful businesses or a windfall somewhere. And then they decide they want to try trading and they think they can do it again, you know, pretty quickly because they've been successful somewhere else. And the luck is that they've got enough money to last years not making any money. But, you know, they try, they think it's learning about analysis. They think it's about getting lots of research. They think it's about, trying to find a magic formula or a silver bullet or a great system. And they just don't get there, but they have enough time and energy to stay in it till they do chance upon something or till they decide to start working with a coach. Or somebody else, or a mentor. They might come across someone who mentors them. So there's a lot of luck involved. But there's so many elements to what makes a great trader.
Yeah.
You know, it's you know, we could do a dozen podcasts about it and still never get to the end of that question.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Look, I mean, I know in my business as well, you see guys come and go and It's what you said about the time in the markets, that it's that Malcolm Gladwell theory of the 10,000 hours that you need to put the 10,000 hours in to actually get to that point of proficiency in anything. There's no quick fix in this business. And I often say to people, it's like anything, you know, you want to go and study to be an architect or a lawyer or an accountant or a doctor. You know, how many thousands of hours do you invest of your time into that, you know, to get to that level of professionalism before you can actually go out and be a lawyer or a doctor or a architect. And trading should be no different, but there does seem to be this mystique around trading that it's an easy thing and you can, you know, go and attend a quick course and on Monday you can start trading. And you, as you say, you know, you get onto the same playing field as the Ray Dalios and the Paul Tudor Joneses of the world. It's just not as simple as that. And unfortunately, I think trading, it does have this mystique, but it also attracts a lot of charlatans, I guess, in the sense that there are plenty of charlatans out there trying to dress it up to be more glamorous than what it is and easier than what it really is. And I guess you've also seen that in your career plenty, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'll give you a clue about that. And I'm going to link this to the new Market Wizards book, which comes out at the time we're doing this. It comes out next week.
Yes.
And I've got three clients in there that I've coached. And one of them, his name's, I wouldn't mention it normally, but he's featured in the book, so everyone's going to know about him. His name is Daljeet Dhaliwal. And he's a client who over the past 12 years has grown. And initially, he didn't actually put his own money into it. He had a line of credit from a prop firm that he managed to get a job in. And they taught him and they mentored him and they showed him different methods, which is part of that. That's why I'm saying the training is so important. And they gave him a line of credit of £30,000 to start with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's over the last 10, 12 years, you know, I can't tell you how much he's made because it's not featured in there and that's not for me to reveal it, but it's an awful lot of money and his track record. He's been compounding close to 300% annually ever since then. And he's a phenomenal trader. And I've been coaching him for the past 4 years now. And I asked him a couple of years ago, you know, at which point in your career, you know, this trading, how far into it do you get to the point where you thought, yeah, this year I'm going to definitely make money. I can feel it. It's not, you know, I now trust myself to make money. And he said it was about 5 or 6 years. Yeah. So, you know, that's about 10,000 hours.
Yes.
You know, and that's with support and backing, you know, and that was with being in an extraordinary team. You know, he was in an extraordinary group. Three of them are featured in this book. You know, there's other ones in that team that aren't featured that I know are incredible. So I think they kind of all learnt from each other. It was a really rare group. And, you know, they developed together and blossomed together. And, you know, you could call that luck. You could say that's part of the luck, you know, just getting in this firm and then being part of that group, you know. Mm-hmm. But, it just shows you, you know, and I've asked this question to quite a few of my guys, my clients over the years, and they say anywhere from 5 years to 7-8 years. And you know, when I look back at my own career, and I said, I don't think I became good till 13 years into my career. I didn't really start prop trading till about 6-7 years into my career. So you could kind of say that's when I started, which means if you take it from that point, it was probably about 6 years of prop trading before I really got it.
Yeah, yeah. Now, risk management is a huge component of trading and trading success. And to this end, you know, the clients that you coach, what sort of risk tolerance do you find they typically have? What do they typically risk as a percentage of their capital on any one trade?
Okay, so again, this varies from trader to trader, and also style to style as well.
Yeah.
So if someone's running a relative value portfolio or a portfolio approach when they've got, say, a long short portfolio, it will be very different. It's very hard to always quantify. You know, if you're running a portfolio, you tend to try and use as much of your capital as possible. And the risk is really measured in a different way. You know, if you're sitting long of, I don't know, you're long of Microsoft and maybe short of Apple, you haven't got the outright risk of the whole stock sector going up and down. Mm. So quantifying that is quite an art. If you're doing directional trades, the guys I know would do anything from maybe 0.1% of their capital to 1%, maybe 2%, depending on certain factors and aspects. Yes. I don't know too many that would risk more than 1%, at least in the initial part of a trade. And then maybe, you know, they'll allow that, but they'll allow a drawdown of maybe 5% occasionally, right. Only very occasionally. Mm. But, you know, that there's always accentuating circumstances. So what people will risk on a trade and the way they manage the risk in their portfolio are two separate things, and people have to get their heads around that.
Yes. Yeah. Do you find that these guys have very set rules in terms of how they trade? Now, do they have specific setups that they look for and they will only trade on those specific setups? Or is there a fairly broad, relaxed approach in terms of market gut feel, I guess you could call it? How do you differentiate between that? And, you know, what do the guys that you typically coach look like in that respect?
You're listening to Talking with Traders, a podcast series brought to you by IG, a world-leading online trading and investment provider. If you haven't checked out the IG online trading platform, please do so and visit IG.com. Also, make sure you subscribe to the podcast series on your favorite podcast app or website by clicking on the subscribe button, and you'll be notified weekly as we release new episodes.
Okay, so the ones, I would say yes is the answer to the people who succeed. No is the answer to the people who are struggling. In the, you know, I believe you've got to create your playbook. You won't succeed till you create your playbook. Yeah. And your playbook will have certain setups that suit you, that you know are, that you're able to trade off. And most people don't have an established playbook. They're just like, I'm going to come in and I'm going to, you know, I suppose you're a cricket guy like me. Yes. Being South African, yep. You know, they'll just start smacking it all over the place without really trying to refine their art. Do you know what I mean? Whereas,
absolutely, yeah.
great cricketers will know the shot they want to take, and you know, they'll perfect it, and they'll have certain, you know, techniques and styles and moments that work for them, and the rest of the time they're trying to find that shot. Mm. So they're playing defensive. You know, they're trying to sneak things here and there. But, you know, they have a playbook. Mm. You know, and you see that in every sports. You know, every sports person has a playbook. They have situations that don't work for them and situations where you do work for them. And you've, you know, and you've got to know when those situations are, and that becomes your edge. Now, it doesn't mean you're not trading, because you're always in the market. You're trying to fish, you know, like cricketer, you're always trying to play a shot to just find angles and find weaknesses in the field and, you know, find opportunities. You know, you don't have to rip. The truth is that between the, you know, the start of the run up and the ball leaving the guy's hand, you can't consciously think, what shot am I going to play here? But when you become that good, you allow it to happen. And it's the same in trading. You know, these guys, they get to know when they are. And the most extraordinary trader in the book is a guy called Amrit Sahl, and I've coached him as well. And I used to call him the sniper. And funnily enough, he's called the unicorn sniper in the book. Okay. And that means that he's looking for unicorns all the time, these rare things that come along. Right. And he acts like a sniper. And I called him a sniper because he would wait to take the perfect shot. And when the perfect shot wasn't there, he wouldn't take it. And it wasn't just about taking the perfect shot. If you know anything about sniping, the sniper must know they've got an escape plan before they can take the shot. They won't take the shot if there's any danger they're going to get caught and found and almost certainly killed. So it's that mentality. So he built his playbook. He developed his playbook over years. He honed it. And the playbook does change. It's not to think it can't change, but you do have a certain type of trade or setup or series of setups that you're looking for.
Now, personality type is also interesting in trading, because I've read in so many books that say that you need to find a style of trading that matches your personality type. And I find myself sitting at the moment in where the trading room where I'm currently working. I mean, I have my own personality, and I'm sitting alongside a guy who's got a slightly different personality to me, and I can see it so clearly. You know, he's into motorbikes and fast cars, whereas I'm not. And the trading styles that we each adopt are quite different in that respect. How important do you believe that is, that you have to find a style that matches your personality, and if there's a mismatch, that you're not going to succeed?
100% important. I wish I could say 1,000%, but you know, obviously it is key. This is key. And I analyze every single trader that I work with. I use a personality tool called the Risk Type Compass. And you can hear an episode on my podcast a few months ago with the guy who created that, and it identifies people by their personality. Now, a few years ago, myself and a colleague ran some analysis on a group of PMs at a large hedge fund to try and identify the organization's DNA in terms of personality, and it had a certain type. And ever since then, I've used this tool, and I did some of my own private research to see if there were any patterns in personality that could tell me whether certain personalities were more likely to succeed than others. And the answer was no. I found people of every single personality type and degree of personality that were succeeding. But the important thing was that they were working, every single one of them was working in ways that really aligned to their personality. And over the years, I've noticed people not working in ways that align to their personality, really struggling, really not, you know, really underperforming. They're more fearful. They lack confidence. Once you hone your way of working in a way that fits your personality, you're going to be far more successful. It's a huge edge. You know, you're slowly tipping the odds in your favor. So you might want to liken it to physical build in that sense, in that if you're built powerfully and you decide you want to go into athletes, you know, you want to become a 100 meters runner. You don't want to become a marathon runner because you don't have the body shape for it. Now, you can run marathons. It wouldn't mean that you can do it, but it does mean that doesn't matter how hard you try, if you're working against the thin, wiry guys who do just as much training as you, they're almost certainly going to outperform you. Likewise, they won't do nearly as well as you in sprint events. You know, if you've got a large build, you probably want to do, you know, sort of field athletics, throwing events where you can use that that muscle mass and that body size to really create extra power for the throwing, but you're not going to be a runner. There's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah.
You know, and we have the same with our personality. No one knows truly where your personality comes from, but it's formed very early in your career, very early in your life, you know, your early years, you know, well before you've even got into your teenage years. You know, most of it in, you know, before you're 3 or 4. And you can't do anything about that. You can't change your personality. You can change the way you are. You can change your philosophy. You can change your attitudes, but you can't change your personality. Unless, of course, you have some sort of traumatic event happen to you. Mm-hmm. So working with your personality is the key edge. And if you're not working with it, you're fighting against it. And that's not a good place to be in as a trader.
Right. Yeah, fascinating. Now, consistency is obviously a big thing in trading as well. And I suppose that also talks to what you were saying about having a playbook and being consistent to your playbook. How do you find, I found it in my early years, it's very difficult to be consistent and to sort of stick to the rules. How do you help traders to be consistent and to stick to their playbook without deviating too much from it?
Okay, so it for me as a coach, what I try to do is I try to shine a light on what they're doing and how they are and where they are, and I try to shine a light on the method, the process that they're using, different stages of it. And in doing that, I'm trying to help them perhaps be more aware of how they're behaving, of what they're doing, as if they were watching themselves. So it's almost like, you know, if you could see yourself playing a sport and watch videos of it back with the coach, you'll start to get a sense of really, you know, who you are and how you are. So that's what I try to do as a coach. Now, you know, you probably see things in your colleague that you're working with that he's not aware of. And, you know, if he was aware of them, he could be a much better trader, even if he's very successful now. Likewise, he could probably see things in what you're doing that you're not aware of. And if you could become aware of them and make changes around them into your coaching, you'd probably become much more, a much better trader, probably more consistent trader. Probably you could then perform at a higher level. You would trust yourself more. And then you'd probably paradoxically take more risk and upsize your risk scale because you trust yourself with it. So it comes back to that self-awareness piece to start with. You have to understand who you are. You have to understand what you're doing as well. A lot of people don't even realize what they're doing. You know, like they say, they come out, they start doing it, they start playing the game, but they're not, you know, they're not really aware fully of what the game is they're playing. So it's starting, you know, really trying to understand your risk process, what it is you're trying to do, why you're trying to do it, what the purpose of that is, what part of that could you take with you and what part could you throw away, what part's unhelpful, but also understand it in how you are, you know, your personality. You know, if you're the excitable personality who gets, you know, quite emotional, you need to take some time to step back after both good periods and bad periods to reground yourself. But if you're one of those more centered people who doesn't feel the extremes as much, you can usually carry on a little bit more, but you're more likely to suffer periods of over-optimism, whereas the emotional person tends to pick up often much quicker on when they're going off balance. So it's almost like it's a paradox that the less emotional people still go off balance and out of sync with the market, but it's much harder for them to realize it sometimes because they're not feeling that they're not as in touch with their emotions, for example.
So
there's a lot about knowing yourself as well and who you are and how you work.
Sure. That sort of leads me to the question I was going to ask you next anyway, in terms of drawdowns on a trading account, and obviously drawdowns, but also major periods of success. I mean, the markets and trading results, I find, tend to cluster. So you might have, you know, winning streaks and losing streaks. And it is a bit of a emotional roller coaster. You can get quite down in the dumps when you have a string of losing trades in a row, but you can also get quite exuberant when you have a string of winning trades in a row. And like you said, sometimes the string of winners can actually be the most dangerous ones, because that's when you tend to want to throw the rule book out the window and become more aggressive. So in your experience, the best traders that you have coached and that you've come across, are they, I presume they're also subject to these emotional swings, but are they generally more centered people, as you refer to them? Are they quite even keeled and don't get too excited or too depressed?
No. Many of the best traders I work with are highly excitable and highly emotional. Really? Okay. Yeah, there's this kind of myth of this kind of, you know, if we go back to the idea of, if you know much about economics, you know, this idea of economic man who's got no emotions and, you know, makes perfect decisions every time and is not biased to anything. And, you know, he doesn't exist. You know, he only exists on a sheet of paper. And the same with traders, this idea of superstar traders being these cool, calm, collective people with no emotions and no egos, you know, they don't exist either. You might think there's people like that, but, you know, the beauty of what I do is, you know, I have these amazing conversations with people, very deep conversations. And, you know, often, you know, I'm told before I start coaching them, you know, if it's in an organization, I'll be told by their manager or, you know, the person who's invited me in to work with that person that, you know, this person is brilliant. He's got no emotions. He doesn't get upset. He's like an iceman. And then I get talking to them and they, you know, they really open up and, you know, you find that's not the case at all. You know, it's something they project externally. And sometimes even that projecting of it can be problematic for them because they're holding it all within them. Mm. So we are emotional beings. You can't help it. That's how we roll. Yeah. That's how, you know, it's like trying to lose your emotions. You know, it's like trying to lose your shadow in the sunshine. It's not going to happen. It's always going to be there. The other side of it is to think of it as your gift, to think of it as, you know, that is what makes you great as well. You know, every trader, you know, that ability to sense something and feel something and find an opportunity and intuit what is going on in the market into a trading opportunity, that all comes from your emotions. So if you deaden that, you lose that. So that's the first thing I'll say about that. The second thing is you do have to manage them. You do have to have structures. That's why a playbook is so important, because your playbook is the kind of the rule book or the guidebook that you can turn to when you're going off balance and on tilt. Yes. You know, and everyone does it. And, you know, it sets up the play. You know, a lot of people that I've spoke to over the year, you know, say I can get into a trade, but I can't take profit. Or, you know, and therefore I end up giving it all back or I take it too early. If your playbook kind of has rules for how you grab profits or take profits or, you know, and they're related to how you lose. And, you know, it's not just a set of structures. It's got to fit within a risk process and a risk philosophy. And you know, it's got to be related to how often you lose and how much you lose. Yes. You know, there's no point having profits that are 2-1 if you lose three times as often as you lose. You know, it's just, you know, and even if you do a 4-1 and you win three times more than you lose, you know, you're not giving yourself a big margin there for when that goes offside. Yeah. So, you know, you have to have strategies that, you know, for example, when I made a lot of money, you know, it would be normally followed back by me giving a lot of money back. So, you know, one thing I had to do was after making a lot of money and having a really good trade, you know, that's when I was at my most dangerous. So I would generally have about a month when I wouldn't go back into that particular market. And because I'm only going to give money back in it, right. You know, and I'm still, you know, the most important thing for me, and it goes back to one of the great things of traders, is closure. Letting go mentally of every single trade that you've ever taken. Until you let go mentally, you should never move on and carry on with that trade. And I call letting go the super skills of great trading. and letting go means lots of other things as well. Letting go of your ego, your beliefs, your fear of losing, your need to be right. But on an individual trade, you must get mental closure, not just physical closure, before you can go back into that market.
Yes, yes. Okay. Now, I could talk to you for hours, Stephen. I'm really enjoying this, but I know you've got to go somewhere soon, and we are running towards the end of our allotted time for this podcast. So I've just got one or two more questions that I'd like to ask you. First thing is, you know, if a start-out trader comes to you and wants to get involved in this business, they tell you they want to take up trading and do it professionally and try and make a living out of trading. What two or three main bits of advice would you give to a start-out trader?
Okay, so the first thing is, don't give up the day job. you know, unless you go 5 or 6 years and you've got enough money or other sources of income to support you, I'd probably say more than 5 or 6 years. You know, I'd say 7 or 8 years, because you don't want to rely on your income during that time. You know, so there's a great story in the Market Wizards book about a guy called Pavel, let me just look him up. I think it's Pavel Krejci. He's a Czech trader. Right. And he was working as a bellhop during his early trading years. And he did that for many years. Even when he started trading, when he started earning money, he kept that job going because it provided his income, and allowed him to learn the job. And the piece in the book is called The Bellhop Who Beat the Pros. That's the title for his chapter. Right. So he did that alongside the other one. I would say, you know, do not plan to live off your income. First of all, it's going to take you years to learn it. Secondly, you'll learn it properly if you don't need to rely on the income at that same time. Yeah. And thirdly, you know, you need to build up some capital and some profits. You know, you're going to be so emotional if you have to live off it and you have to earn an income off it, that emotionality is going to push you to extremes. It's going to cause you to make bad decisions. So that would be my number one piece of advice. The second thing is, you know, do some reading, read some great books, read the Market Wizards books, but also I tell people, learn probabilistic thinking. You know, this job is not a job where you have rules that would define. You can't go out and say how to become, you know, a plumber or how to become, you know, a clockmaker. You could get a book on that. You can read that. Yeah. You can't do that with traders. It's not how to be a trader. Yeah. You know, you have to learn as you were doing it. But you have to understand the nature of markets. So I encourage people to read probabilistic thinking books. I've just interviewed Annie Duke, who's a former poker player.
Yes.
Who's written a couple of great books, including a new one, How to Decide.
Right.
I encourage people to read, not always the easiest books, but to read the works of Nassim Taleb to really understand the nature of uncertainty and luck and randomness, and to realize how much that is a function or a factor in trading and in the work they're going to do and in the way their career is going to, as a trader, is going to progress. So, and then just read some great, you know, biographies. You know, there's so many around, you know, find books from people who have succeeded. As I said, all the Market Wizards books are out there, but, and there's some other good books. Like the work of Mark Douglas, you know, if you're going to start out, you've got to read his books.
Yeah. Trading in the Zone. It's one of my favorite trading books. And
Absolutely.
Trader, his first book, both brilliant.
Yeah. But, you know, books like, you know, Brett Steenbarger's work, Van Tharp, you know, there's just a wealth of knowledge and wisdom in those books.
Yeah, no, that's right. And there's so many brilliant trading books out there. I was going to ask you that, what trading books would you recommend? But I think you've pretty much answered the question with some of those that you've mentioned there. And you talk about that, the Market Wizards book. It's called, what's it called? Anonymous Market Wizards, I think.
No, Unknown Market Wizards.
Unknown Market Wizards. And I know it's due to come out next week, I think the 3rd of November. I've got it loaded into my Audible app waiting, and I've paid for it and I'm waiting for it to come live. I can't wait to listen to the audiobook of that.
Okay. Well, I'm actually interviewing Jack Schrager this evening for our podcast episode, which comes out next week. And then I'm also interviewing him live on a webinar for the Society of Technical Analysts in a couple of weeks' time. And I can give you the link to that, please, by the way, if you want.
It would be wonderful. I mean, to that extent, how do people follow you? If there are people listening to this podcast who have not heard of you before, and first of all, they must follow you on Twitter, because I absolutely love everything you tweet is fantastic. So they've got to follow you on Twitter. At AlphaMind101, is it?
Yes.
That's right. Okay, so that's how they can follow you on Twitter. And your podcast that you run, how can they access that?
The Alpha Mind podcast. It's me and a co-host, Mark Randall, who's a former trader and broker in the markets. And he focuses more on the mindset side of trading. So he's a brilliant, if anyone wants coaching on mindset, he's fantastic on that side. But we do it together, and you'll find it on iTunes, Spotify, and it's basically all the main podcast sites, or you can go to alpha-mind.net, and you'll see them there. We're going to start putting them on YouTube soon. So we're going to be setting up an Alpha Mind 101 YouTube channel. I don't know how you do that, but someone's doing it for us.
Okay, super. Well, I'll certainly look out for that. I can't wait to see that. Well, Stephen, I'm going to have to end the interview there. We've run out of time. It's been really fascinating talking to you. I've thoroughly enjoyed every minute of this, and I think the listeners will enjoy it as well. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And I look forward to listening to that interview with Jack Schrager that you're going to be doing later.
Okay, absolute pleasure, Garth.
Thank you. And let's stay in touch. Thanks so much.
Thanks for joining us for today's episode of Talking with Traders, brought to you by IG, a world-leading CFD provider. We really are privileged to have such a leader in the field of online trading involved in this series. Please follow us on Facebook and engage with us there. And a reminder to make sure you subscribe to the series by clicking the subscribe button on your favorite app. Till next time.